Oyez, oyez, oyez. The Honorable, the Supreme Court of Texas. All persons having business before the Honorable, the Supreme Court of Texas are admonished to draw near and give their attention, for the Court is now seated. God save the State of Texas and this Honorable Court.
Thank you. Be seated.
This morning, the Court has three matters on its oral submission docket. They are State of Texas versus Maria Gonzalez from Hidalgo County and the 13th Court of Appeals, Coastal Oil and Gas Corporation and Coastal Oil and Gas USA versus Coates Energy Trust and Coates Energy Interest, also from Hidalgo County and the 13th Court of Appeals, and Texas A&M University Kingsville and others versus Grant Lawson from Travis County. In each matter, the court has allotted 20 minutes for each side to present oral argument, and petitioners may reserve a portion of that time for rebuttal by advising the marshal. We will take a brief recess in between each argument and complete these arguments before noon. The court is taping the arguments, and you may purchase a tape for a nominal fee from our clerk. Justice Rodriguez is not sitting in the first cause. The court is ready to hear arguments in State versus Gonzalez.
May it please the court, Mr. Kyle Duncan will present argument to petitioner. Petitioner has reserved 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Good morning. May it please the court. This case poses a simple question the legislature has already answered. When can you sue the state for the vandalism of the stop sign? The answer is in only one situation. When the state has actual notice of the destruction of a sign and fails to timely correct it. In this case, the state has been sued for something different. Its strategies for anticipating and preventing future vandalism. That suit falls outside the only waiver for sign vandalism and is therefore barred. The key to this case is the exclusion from the immunity waiver in 06083, the Tort Claims Act. That is a categorical subject matter exclusion from the waiver in the Tort Claims Act. How do we know that? The introduction to that section says this chapter does not apply to a claim arising from. That simply says you cannot sue the state for a claim arising from what? A claim arising from the removal or destruction of a sign by a third party. That is the beginning and end of this case we submit. The unless language in that subsection is a narrow exception to that exclusion. It does not apply in this case because there was no actual notice. There's no evidence that the state had actual notice that the sign had been removed or destroyed on February 8th when the accident occurred. That is the removal or destruction out of which this claim arises. The unless exception does not apply, the state retains immunity, and that is the end of this case. The Court of Appeals got around A3 by construing the word condition in A2 to mean the repeated or frequent vandalism of a sign. And that is where this case overlaps with the case that this court heard last month in Garza. Condition cannot be interpreted that broadly, as the Court of Appeals did. In this case, it's even clearer why it can't be interpreted the way the Court of Appeals did. And that's because A3 says it can't be interpreted that way. A2 of the Tort Claims Act should not be interpreted to allow a claim, in other words, a vandalism claim based on something less than actual notice, because A3 bars that claim. For that reason, we urge the court, as we urged it in Garza, to define condition if it feels it needs to go beyond what I just said. To define condition as a physical flaw in a traffic sign that impedes the traffic control function. That definition shows, for another reason, that there's no condition in this case. There's no physical flaw in this sign. There is no evidence that this sign was defective, was installed contrary to NUTCD, was installed or maintained in any way contrary to law. Which leads to my third point. What are the plaintiffs actually attacking in this case? And it is the discretionary decisions that the department may or may not make in combating vandalism. In other words, should we have a 24-hour patrol? Should we change the way the sign is installed so that it is less breakaway or more breakaway? Should we have a concrete barrier around the sign? Should we should we move the sign further from the road. These, it is undisputed, these acts are within the discretion of the department. This court's decision in Miguel compels the result that those acts are outside the waiver of immunity.
Well, but they argue that it's not a discretionary matter, it's a maintenance matter, and that makes the difference. Why isn't it simply a maintenance matter, as they assert?
For two reasons, Your Honor. When the courts have defined maintenance, they have said it's to keep a sign or a signal in its original condition. There's no dispute
that
it was kept.
Well, would you say that pretty well sums it up, that the signs were not in their original condition?
Which leads to my second point, which is why. Why weren't they in their original condition? Because criminals were knocking them down. And what...
what I'm trying to get at, the reason why the accident happened is the absence of the traffic control sign. Is that right?
No, Your Honor, we disagree with that. The reason this accident happens is because the sign was removed or destroyed by a third party, which shows why A3 applies
and
A2.
Well, no, but I mean, there was no sign there.
Well, the sign was down, Your Honor. It was there. It was in the
Well, there were two, right?
There were two. The one westbound was missing. That one the vandals had taken. This one was down in the grass. It had been knocked down. The evidence was that that these signs had been popped out, probably by a vehicle. They had been knocked down. The evidence in this case all shows that it's vandalism. When we have vandalism...
Well, I understand that's your basic point, that three applies and two doesn't.
That's correct.
But I'm having difficulty buying an argument that the reason why this occurs is because it's a discretionary matter, not a maintenance matter.
Well, let me try to answer your question this way, Justice Baker. Maintenance is not in the Tort Claims Act. When courts refer to maintenance, what they're referring to is a non-discretionary implementation of a discretionary act.
Well, I agree with you. Whether to put a stop sign there or not in the first place is discretionary.
Sure.
And so if there was none there and you make that decision, you're not liable.
That's
correct.
The next step
is ordinarily, if you decide to put one there, you're supposed to keep it up so it'll serve its purpose, which is, quote, maintenance, I think is what they're arguing, and that you, under their view, you didn't maintain it.
Let me try to answer it this way. A3 defines what actionable maintenance is, and it's this: to correct the removal or destruction of the sign by a third party within a reasonable time after actual notice. That's what maintenance is in A3. We did that.
Well, let's say we don't disagree with that, but that is agreeing that it's maintenance, not discretion.
Well, I think what I'm trying to say is that because maintenance is in the Tort Claims Act, it's just a buzzword. We have to say what is behind it. It's a non-discretionary implementation of a discretionary function. There is no non-discretionary implementation of a discretionary action in this case, because all the actions they complain about are themselves discretionary. So it's just like in Miguel. We're complaining about the placement of the warning barrels. And they say, oh, well, these guys on the maintenance crew, they place these warning barrels. That's not a discretionary decision. But this court said their placement of those warning barrels was guided by TxDOT policy, and that's the same case we have here.
Okay.
Which gets me to my fourth.
So, are you saying then that TxDOT's policy is having the sign be vandalized and taken down six times within 17 years and just continue business as usual?
No, Your Honor, that is not TxDOT's policy.
So this is a very unusual circumstance in that there was repeated vandalism and the department was on notice of the repeated vandalism and just continued to put the sign up in the same way it had added up before.
Well, it did, Your Honor.
And that seems to me to be the crux of what's going on here. So can you address the argument by the court of the analysis that the Court of Appeals used, which was to zone in on the specific facts of this case, that gave this to be a condition at this intersection that was created by the way the Department of Transportation handled the circumstance?
Well, and I hope I'm answering your question. That to me asks, what is a condition in A2, correct?
And that's what I'd like you to answer, because they defined a condition in a way that brought this case under Section 2, which seems to me to be the crux of the matter.
Yes, Your Honor. And it's our position that every single case in Texas, except two, defines condition in such a way that it cannot be the way the Court of Appeals defined it. The cases that have defined condition have focused on a physical flaw, something wrong with the sign, For example, suppose the metal in this sign were defective for some reason, and the sign couldn't stay up. Suppose someone couldn't read the sign because it had been so weathered by rain that you couldn't read the stop sign. That's what a condition refers to. That is consonant with the other areas of...
But as I recall from the Court of Appeals opinion, they also talk about condition with relationship to, as vis-a-vis these particular signs, in that the way they were mounted, the way that the pole was buried in the ground, that meant that the condition of these signs made them susceptible to vandalism, and that it really was the condition that was at issue.
Well, let me answer that two ways. First of all, if that's what a condition is, vis-a-vis vandalism, then every sign in the state of Texas and every traffic light in the state of Texas has a condition. I'd submit that any sign is susceptible to vandalism. A criminal can go out and try to take down the sign. There's no question about
that. Well, no, I understand that. I understand that, and I understand your argument about Section 3. I just want to hear what your best argument is as to why the unusual facts in this case, 6 times the sign was vandalized in 17 days, and evidently was very susceptible to being vandalized, which is what I understand the Court of Appeals hung its hat on.
That's true.
Making it a condition. Maybe it wouldn't have been a condition the very first time it happened, but the fact that it happened 6 times in 17 days is what made it a condition. And that's what I need for you to address for me, if you would, please.
Okay, I will try.
Okay.
Aside from the statutory argument that I made about A3 and A2,
right.
You can't interpret condition that way. Forget about A3. You can't interpret condition that way because what it does is it allows you to attack discretionary decisions. Therefore, it runs over 056. 056 and A2 ought to be interpreted so they exist peacefully together. When you allow a suit to attack the susceptibility of a sign to vandalism because of what the state is or isn't doing to prevent it, what you're saying is you're allowing a court or a jury to say, well, state, we think you should have done something different than continue to put the sign up in accordance with your design specifications and call the police. You should have done something else. But I can't figure out what they want us to do, because everything they want us to do is either within our discretion or it's flat out wrong. It would make the signs more dangerous. Building a barrier around the sign, sinking the sign in concrete, that causes a greater hazard, I'd submit, than the vandalism itself. The reason these signs are installed the way they are is because traffic engineers, have made a discretionary judgment call about how they ought to be designed. So that's my first answer to your question. If we allow that to be a condition, it runs over 056. A second reason is it violates the text of 060A2. That provision asks the state to correct the absence, malfunction, or condition of the sign within a reasonable time. Well, it's easy to know what correcting an absence is. You put up another one. It's easy to know what correcting a malfunction is. You fix it. But if condition is susceptibility to vandalism, what are you asking the state to correct? What are you asking it to do? Are you asking it to make sure that a vandal never comes there again and does a criminal act? I submit that would be a waiver of unprecedented...
Well, it seems to me, though, the answer is not that the state should do nothing when it has this kind of circumstance.
Well, I disagree that the state did nothing.
Well, I mean, that seems to be the argument that you're making there, is that the response is that there just wasn't anything. It was discretionary, so the state should do nothing. And I realize that's not the crux of what we're dealing with here, but I think that that's what the Court of Appeals was wrestling with, and why we have to deal with the issue of whether or not these special circumstances make this a condition.
Well, I understand.
This is so clearly an A3 case. How come you did not object to a charge that tracks the language of the section that the Court of Appeals relied on?
Well, as I understand it, Your Honor, this case was submitted as a premises liability case. The case never should have been submitted in the first place because the facts of the case show that the state retains its liability from, retains its immunity from suit, the erroneous definition of condition is implicit in the charge to the court. It's asking the jury to find a condition, and in fact, the jury didn't even know what it was supposed to find. That's why it asked the question, well, are we focusing on the state's knowledge of the whole series of events or just this one event? So I feel like we did object, and we certainly preserved the error insofar as we even have to, because this goes to immunity.
Yeah, let me.
You
You preserved the error by moving for a judgment.
Well, yes, moving for directed verdict, moving for judgment, notwithstanding the verdict.
What's your objection to the charge?
Well, the objection to the charge was, I believe we did object the condition should be defined in a different way. The court didn't define it at all. We were stuck at that point with the court charging this case as a condition case. It's not a condition case. It's a vandalism case. We were stuck with it. We had to come up with something for the court. So we said, well, define it as a down stop sign, which basically limits our exposure to A3 liability, frankly. So I hope I've answered the question. Yes,
let's look at A2 condition. If you decide to post a warning sign down the valley near the coast, it's awfully windy. Could a condition be a sign that blows down in the wind on a routine basis? I understand your argument about a policy on how to mount it, but I mean, at some point, couldn't just the policy decision, we're only going to mount it with tissue paper, and so it never performed. I mean, at some point, couldn't the sign be inappropriate for the circumstances in which it's being used, be a condition of property that would waive immunity from the state?
I understand, Your Honor. I think at some point, yes, the way that the state chooses to install a sign could rise to the level of a condition under certain circumstances. If there's something inherently wrong with the mounting of the stop sign that means it cannot perform its intended function, I think we're closer to a condition there. But again, we have to be careful not to run over 056. The two sections should be interpreted together.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel. Court is ready to hear argument from respondents.
May it please the court. Ms. Renee McAvaney will present argument from respondents.
Good morning. I want to apologize in advance. I have a bit of a cold, so I do have a glass of water here, and I hope you would indulge me to take a drink every once in a while. I agree with Justice Hankinson that the crux of this matter is, can these particular facts create a condition and implicate two rather than three?
But how can you extricate that from the design question? That seems to be the difficulty here, because the only real permanent fix would be a change in the design, and isn't that a discretionary function?
Well, first of all, I disagree that a permanent fix would be a design change. I think it would be a maintenance change. And this goes back to how this court has developed the law in Miguel and Abel and Asta.
Tell me the type of maintenance change you're talking about that would eliminate this problem permanently.
Yes. Look, let me go back and make sure that we have the proper framework to understand what is discretionary and what's not discretionary, because I think that affects your question regarding design. You see, what this court has said is that the initial decision-making process as to whether there should be a traffic control device at a particular location, what kind of traffic control device to be installed there, creates it, that is discretionary because this court, or because the legislature and TxDOT has to make certain policy decisions. But they make that decision, as Justice Baker said, they make the decision to have a certain level of traffic control function at a particular intersection. Once that decision is made, then the implementation of that decision, and like in this case, the maintenance of that particular level of function.
What if the intersection as designed isn't working properly? Not because of a down stop sign, because it's just not controlling traffic properly, and they decide to tinker with a few things to make it right. That's not maintenance.
You're absolutely right, because that is going back to the policy decision that was made by TxDOT to determine exactly what kind of function needed to be created in this particular intersection, how much notice the traffic...
Well, I guess what I'm having trouble with is it appears to be the items that you think they have not included is anchoring it properly or more designing the anchoring of the stop sign in a different way, and that just seems to me to go to design.
Let me explain. Maintenance means to preserve the traffic control function as it was established by TxDOT. That's what maintenance means, to preserve the function. So when you look at it from that perspective, those specific tasks that should be undertaken in order to preserve the traffic function are not discretionary tasks. And that's even more solidified by the fact that you look through the Texas manual on uniform traffic control devices, and there's a specific section in there, which was before the trial court and before the jury, that talks about the various tasks that a sign worker could employ in order to resolve this vandalism-prone nature of the sign. And, Your Honor, there's evidence in this record that those sign workers needed no specific authority to be able to do those tasks. For example, could they have moved the sign, the pole, over farther away from the street? Yes, that is something that...
But what evidence is there in this record that but for that, this would not have come?
Actually, Mr. Soto, the sign worker, testified that that could have made a difference.
Could have made a difference, but he didn't say... in reasonable probability or but for?
Well, I think his testimony is, it's fair to say that his testimony is that it would have made a difference. And there's also the welding, and the welding was another one of those tasks that's listed in the unit.
But how do they decide whether it will then be safe? An argument's been made that if you do certain things, it will become unsafe in other ways.
That's a very good question.
Isn't that discretionary?
That's a very good question. That's why there are specific tasks listed in that particular manual. That policy decision had already been made. And that was implicated that the policy decision was made by TxDOT. What are the various tasks that can be undergone in order to make a, that would be reasonable steps,
and
by the way,
how
reasonable
they choose
steps
between those tasks which one to apply?
Well, they get to decide based on the fact that the sign worker is there and knows that particular location. And the evidence is this sign worker moves poles all the time. He had complete authority to go ahead and work with those signs so that they would be.
We had a case that dealt with the barrels. And I assume that this was in the manual as well. You could use barrels. You could use warning signs. The manual would let you use either, and whoever made that decision, you chose the barrels. And we said the decision to choose barrels as opposed to rails or warning sign, which were all approved, was a discretionary decision. How do you distinguish
right
that
the
case?
Distinction here is that is exactly the decision of what level of traffic function is going to be provided at that location. The placement of deciding to use the type that is barrels, in that particular case, that's the Miguel case, is a decision that determines what type of traffic function is going to be supplied at that particular location. That decision was already made in this case. The TxDOT had already decided what type of traffic function would be provided at this particular location.
Let's assume that's the case. Then what value is there to this Section 3, as I understand it, on the vandalism actual notice deal, if you could always argue, and it seems to me you could always argue, it doesn't matter that this happened 6 times in 17 days, you could always argue that knowing the nature of the neighborhood, knowing the nature of the community that the sign was put in, for all of those considerations, the failure to make this a vandalism-proof sign was a non-discretionary act. Couldn't you make that argument, irrespective of the actual facts in this case of the vandalism occurring, just the fact that they were on notice of a condition in the neighborhood that said if you put this sign as opposed to that sign, that's a non-discretionary act for which you would be liable if the sign got vandalized?
The reference here is really time frame. It's the initial decision of TxDOT to provide this specific type of traffic function at this specific location, that is what this court has held is a discretionary act. And that's that's the law that's gelled, and it's
a
good
one. Maybe I wasn't clear. Your argument is once they've made that, that's not your argument. Your argument is that having been vandalized, they now were aware of a condition that needed to be corrected, which is you need to put a non-vandalism possible sign there. Isn't that your point?
In a way, it's my point.
Not be on notice before? They decide I'm going to post a sign. Today,
the council says, we're going to post a sign. Mm-hmm. Now, couldn't you make the argument that simultaneously with or immediately thereafter or whatever, this no longer discretionary for them to decide to post a sign that is not vandalism proof if the if they were aware that within that community there was a propensity to take, you know, I don't know, Haight Ashbury street signs down or something? Couldn't you be making that argument?
I think that you make a good point, and that is if in part of the decision-making process was that this particular area is one that is vandalism prone or it's not vandalism prone. If there was evidence in the record that that was part of a policy making process to determine the level of stability or the type of vandalism prone sign would be placed in this specific location, I would say that initial policy decision, which would have taken into consideration the vandalism prone nature of the neighborhood, that would be discretionary, but that's not the facts of this case.
But wait,
this is a unique set.
Now, and they made the decision after the vandalism to continue to use a specific type of sign. There wasn't. Why is that different from the example you just gave us? Knowing vandalism, they nevertheless made a decision of what type of sign to put back up.
The difference is that once the sign was placed out there and the traveling public can rely on that sign, then it becomes an obligation of TxDOT to maintain the sign so it retains the same level of traffic control function.
What about the barrels? Let's suppose that the TxDOT had made the decision to put barrels at the split in a freeway. And that, time after time, cars would hit the barrels and there would be severe injuries or death. And the allegation was made, well, you can use barrels, but you could fill them with something different that would cut down on the number of serious injuries or death. The TxDOT doesn't do it. Is that a discretionary decision, or is that maintenance?
Assuming that the traffic barrels were still performing the traffic control function for which they were initially placed there, then that particular decision would be discretionary.
Well, they would. The TxDOT chose the specific kind of barrel it wanted to put at that intersection.
Mm-hmm.
No cars went over off the intersection down onto the freeway below, but the cars that did hit the barrels, that people were severely injured and killed.
Mm-hmm.
And that happened over and over again, and TxDOT didn't change out the kind of barrels or change what it filled the barrels with. Would that be the failure of TxDOT to do that be maintenance or a discretionary decision?
It would be discretionary because that does not address, and I'm assuming that the barrels were put there for a specific traffic control function, whatever that is, maybe to provide.
Well, to provide some sort of buffer for people who would otherwise hit the concrete split,
mm-hmm.
and to keep the car from going off the edge.
I think that assuming that it was not effectively performing the traffic control function for which it was placed there, then I think that a duty is triggered for the state to rethink its decision.
So its decision what to initially place there has to, at some point, you say that has to be rethought, and that's not a discretionary decision.
I think you can create facts that would go that far, but that's not this case.
What is the evidence that you rely upon in this case to show that this is the state was performing a maintenance function once this series of events was put into motion?
Okay. There's a number of pieces of evidence that support that. If we define maintenance as performing some work to preserve the traffic function control, then the instances when the state went out and attempted to correct the situation might move toward maintenance, although it wouldn't be effective maintenance and it wouldn't have corrected the condition, or, by the way, if we move to A3, it would not have corrected the removal or the destruction problem either.
What specific evidence? Did they just keep going back out and put the sign up the way it had been
yes.
placed before?
Yes, Your Honor, they did that. And then there's one other thing, and I think that this is important to note. The TxDOT unit recognized that they had a severe problem here and that this intersection was not serving the traffic control function that it was intended to do. And so the supervisor issued an order that this TxDOT unit would monitor this intersection twice a day. They would go through that intersection twice a day to monitor to see if the signs were down or not. The evidence is undisputed that they failed to follow their own directive on the weekend that this accident occurred. And this, it's important to understand the context. The sign was down or removed on February 2nd, on February 3rd, on February 5th, on February 6th, and then we get to the weekend of the 7th and the 8th. And during that time frame, the order was still in place for the TxDOT unit to monitor this intersection and to check the signs twice a day, and they didn't do it.
Big Friday. I thought the order was Monday through Friday, and they would rely on the sheriff's department.
They relied on the sheriff's department to review it at night, but they did not. There was no provision in the order that that obligation would not continue throughout the weekend. And even if that order was for just Monday through Friday, and it wasn't, then that still shows a failure on the part of TxDOT. Because they know that it's going to be. In fact, it's important to remember that the two weekends before, the sign had been down. So they knew. In fact, there's testimony of one of the maintenance workers where he says, we knew as soon as we put it back up that it was going to come back down. They knew.
So is the Court of Appeals wrong when they say that it was up on the 7th?
There is some evidence that that it could have been up on the 7th. I think
an apartment employee observed the signs were in place on the 7th. Is that right?
That's Saturday, yes, the 7th. The accident occurred on the 8th.
I thought you were arguing that the policy was not in place on the weekend, or it was not.
In fact, that testimony is that the maintenance worker just happened to be going through the intersection and noticed that it was up. There's also some evidence that
he happened to be going through because he was supposed to be twice a day.
No. Also, that Saturday, there was a maintenance worker that was working and very near that specific location. Mr. Soto was working on another sign, an exit sign for 83, and so he was very close to the location, easily could have followed that directive to go inspect, and he says that he didn't.
Let me ask one question. This whole situation could have been avoided if there were increased police involvement at that intersection, right? If it had been monitored more closely by law enforcement, which has nothing to do with the condition of the sign or the way that it is installed. Isn't that right?
I wouldn't say that it has nothing to do with the condition of the sign.
But the whole, this whole situation, without respect to what TxDOT did or didn't do, if police had monitored that area more closely, then this accident wouldn't have occurred.
That's a good point, Justice. And what's important to add to that point, which
puts this more into the category of, seems to me, an A3 vandalism.
Well, let me point out that the police department was contacted by TxDOT, and TxDOT told the police department, we're going to monitor it during the day. We're asking you to monitor it in the evenings. So I think that's an important point, that TxDOT realized it was their obligation to inspect, because inspection is part of maintenance.
Ms. McElhaney, then my question is, when talking about the evidence of maintenance, it sounds like a discretionary decision on the part of TxDOT to go through, to check the intersection twice a day. Is that a discretionary decision, a policy decision?
No.
That's a maintenance decision?
That is a maintenance decision, and the case law says that's a maintenance decision. Maintenance includes inspecting. And remember, that's one of those tasks that is contained within the Texas Manual and Uniform Texas Traffic Control Devices.
But how often to inspect is discretionary?
No, that could be true. So let's look at that and very quickly. If we follow the analysis that this court has used relating to when discretionary becomes non-discretionary, it's discretionary until the policy is created. Once the policy is created, from that point on, the implementation and the carrying out of that policy is non-discretionary. And that is an important point here.
So if TxDOT has across the state, and we're going to inspect our highways once a week, and they don't, are they're liable for failure to inspect highways?
Potentially, yes. And that follows this court's
case. Even though they don't have knowledge, notice, or any kind of
other notice. Just the failure to inspect can supply the notice.
That's a very good point. No, there would need to be some kind of notice, either constructive notice under A2 or actual notice under A3.
Ms. McElhaney, I have a problem with looking at Section 2 when Section 3 seems to explicitly deal with this circumstance. The legislature anticipated that there might be vandalism or third persons might interfere with the operation of traffic control devices, and that, in fact, they specifically address that circumstance. Why doesn't 3, by its very terms, apply to this circumstance, and why should we try to read around it and get under Section 2?
You don't need to read around it. If I could refer the court to the exact language of A3. A3 addresses, first of all, it addresses the removal or destruction of a traffic control sign. That refers a single incident. We're not talking about a single incident in this case. We never have complained based on a single incident. Our complaint was with maintenance of that
intersection. But you do have a removal or destruction of the sign.
Yes, because that happened repeatedly, and the repeated nature of that is, and it wasn't the single instance, Justice Hecht.
I understand that you can make that claim under 2, but under 3, it doesn't say repeated, single. It just says removal or destruction of the sign. Doesn't 3 apply?
No, I would say it does not apply under these facts.
If 3 does apply, you lose this.
No. Your Honor, I'm sorry to interrupt you. I am so sorry.
We know that's your position.
No, I was just going to ask about exfoliation, but they don't seem to want to go on that.
But, so I would draw the question. Your Honor, if I could explain why I said those so quickly. And there's a couple reasons. First, I think there's evidence in this record.
But you're running out of time.
I understand.
If 3 applies, can you still win because of spoliation?
We can win because of spoliation. We can also win because the state failed to correct the removal or destruction. Even as late as February 6th, when they popped that sign back up, they knew at that time, the evidence is undisputed, they knew at that time that popping that sign back up was not going to correct the removal or the destruction, that it was going to happen again. That evidence is in the record.
Any other questions? Thank
well,
you.
Well, I do have one question. You said the definition should be, of maintenance should be to preserve the original traffic control function. If we were to take that definition, I think it's our Miguel case, the barrel case, wouldn't that case have come out differently? Because the argument would have been in that case that the barrels were not preserving their original traffic control function, that you needed railings and warning signs and something other than the barrels. So wouldn't, if we to accept your definition, that means we decided Miguel incorrectly.
No. Miguel is really dealing with that initial decision-making process.
But it became clear that it wasn't working.
But the fact is, it wasn't not working because of a condition, some kind of flaw in the actual maintenance.
Well, it was designed to keep these people from running off the road, and they ran off the road, so it was not, it didn't preserve the original traffic control function. So if we use your definition, our result in Miguel was wrong.
Well, I would disagree to the extent that the facts in this case are different than Miguel, because what you have is an initial policy decision that reflected on exactly that issue. How are we going to do the job here of diverting traffic, of guiding traffic? In this case, the issue of maintaining vandalism-prone signs was not, there's no evidence that was part of the analysis of determining exactly what kind of sign was going to be placed. That initial decision by the by TxDOT to determine what traffic control function and what type of traffic control function to be created in that particular location. That's how it's different from Miguel.
Let me ask you real quickly, if we were to adopt your construct, and this is what I'm having a problem with, I understand you say that once is not enough for a condition, but at some point it arises to the level of becoming a condition. Who's to make the qualitative choice as at what point it becomes a condition? Once, three times, five, seven, over what period of time, over what continuum? How are we to, isn't that kind of a slippery slope to get on, and who's to make that choice? Is it a jury or is it us as a policymaker?
I think it's the trial court's responsibility.
As a legal matter?
I think it's a legal question. Are there factual underpinnings? Yes. But is it a legal question for the court? Yes. I think it's a legal question for the court. And I think that it's not something you need to get to in this case because it's undisputed in this case that these signs were vandalism prone and that it was happening over and over and over again and that TxDOT knew it was going to happen again and they knew that what the actions they were taking were really not correcting the removal or the destruction problem.
Thank you, Counsel.
Thank you.
Chief Justice Phillips, I do want to talk about spoliation. I just wasn't smart enough to direct the court's attention to it the first time around. They can't win based on spoliation for this reason. The trial judge abused his discretion by giving that instruction in the first place. Why? Because the missing evidence in this case is irrelevant to the actual notice of the sign being down on the 8th. And more than that, we rebutted any adverse inference coming from that missing logbook by showing the equivalent evidence through the timesheets, through the equipment utilization forms, and the monthly sign reports. I refer the court to our Exhibit 4. Exhibit 4 is page 2 from Soto's logbook. Page 2 is missing. I'm sorry, page 1 is missing. Page 2 is our Exhibit 4. It shows what kind of information is in the missing logbook. It's not a call-in log. It's not a Pedro Soto gets a call and the sign's down and he notes, I need to go repair it. That's not what this logbook is. They would have you believe that from their brief, but it is not. Our Exhibit 4 shows that. It is simply a record of repairs made already. The timesheets that
it
we have...
It doesn't show when notice of that repair came to
it does not, Your Honor. It does not. The time, there's testimony in the record at what the time column on Exhibit 4 is, and it's not notice of. It's when I got to the intersection and repaired the sign.
Is there any evidence that there was a gap in time between the time I got to the intersection to repair and when I made the repairs, like it might have been hours or days later?
Not at all, Your Honor. What that logbook shows is that I went to, and this is what the entry on the 8th says, which is the day of the accident, I went to the intersection at 4:45, I believe the time is.
But in the past history, is there any evidence that the log had ever shown, well, I went out there and saw it, and then I went back to the shop, and it was a couple of days or a day or hours before I got back to fix it?
There is no evidence that the logbook would have shown anything like that, and that's why it's irrelevant to the issue. This is, and I refer myself to your discussion of spoliation in Trevino versus Ortega, Justice Baker, because we agree with that scheme. And this is where we fall in on that scheme. The plaintiffs cannot show that their ability to present their case was hindered by this missing bit of evidence. They are trying to use a spoliation presumption to pull facts out of thin air. The instruction, first of all, only rises to the level of the weaker of the two instructions because this evidence is not prejudicial. And so, therefore, the instruction alone couldn't even withstand the no evidence point. But more than that, we rebutted the presumption so that it never should have been given in the first place by showing what, in fact, that logbook would have contained. And what it would have contained is this. Repairs on the 5th, repairs on the 6th, repairs on the 8th after the accident. That's no evidence of our actual knowledge prior to the accident. This was a harmful instruction because it invited the jury to find actual notice from no evidence whatsoever. I'm sorry.
Mr. Duncan, Ms. McElhaney says that the maintenance that TxDOT was using at this intersection included inspection. And that, do you agree that inspection is maintenance?
No, I do not, Your Honor.
Then why not?
For this reason. Whether we inspect, when we inspect, how often we inspect, that is a discretionary decision.
I haven't looked at it, but she says that we're going to find in the record the manual that's going to identify specific maintenance tasks and that one of the specific maintenance tasks is going to be inspection. You don't agree with that?
No, I don't agree with that, but let me even attack the premise of it. In King, this court said that the MUTCD, even when it says shall, it's not a non-discretionary legal duty for purposes of the Tort Claims Act. That ends that whole line of argument as far as we're concerned. Anything the MUTCD says is a non-discretionary, not a policy-level decision that cannot allow a suit under the Tort Claims Act. This court has already held that in King.
But if TxDOT makes a decision, even if it is discretionary, a policy decision to inspect an intersection, then the actual carrying out of that inspection is not, in fact, discretionary at that point in time. And if they fail to inspect and live and follow through on their policy, then you've gone beyond the discretionary decision-making. Isn't that right? Or am I misunderstanding how that works?
That is their argument, Your Honor, and it is possible that if a policy decision were made to inspect at certain times and it were shown that it were not done, that could overcome the discretionary problem. But here's why it doesn't in this case. There is no evidence that there was a policy-level decision to inspect this intersection on the weekends.
If that's the case, then it's not a discretionary function. And in fact, it was a maintenance function that on the job they were trying to preserve the traffic control function by making sure it was working.
Well,
I mean, don't you catch yourself coming and going on that?
No, Your Honor.
Okay.
For this reason, maintenance is discretionary. If there were a policy decision at the level of, say, for example, the city council voting that we should have a maintenance policy, then that might come within the kinds of cases that say when you make a policy decision and then negligently fail to implement it, you could be liable if it results in a condition, for example. But we don't have that evidence here. We don't have the evidence of a policy-level decision. And in fact, if you look at the record cites in our brief, it shows that our decision-makers at TxDOT said, yes, we have the discretion to order overtime inspection. But in this case, we decided not to do it because it's within our discretion and we chose to rely on the police. Now, this evidence that they're talking about of the nighttime versus daytime, if you look at that evidence in their record sites, it is pure speculation. At most, the person who called the police, who is not a policy-making person, said, we think that perhaps the vandalism is occurring more frequently.
Do you agree with Ms. McElhaney's definition that maintenance involves the preservation of traffic control functions designed by TxDOT?
That's a great point. No, I don't, Your Honor. Maintenance involves keeping the sign in its original state. What she's referring to is the definition of condition from Lawson, which is the A2, totally different to this.
I don't understand the distinction between what you just said and what she said. What I heard you say in terms of defining maintenance sounds like the same thing as preserving the traffic control function as designed.
No, it's not, Your Honor.
Okay.
For this reason, any maintenance in this case involved keeping the traffic sign up as it was originally put there. In other words, was it originally put there with the screw-in or breakaway design? Was it originally put 12 feet from the road? Maintenance is keeping it in that state. We don't ask in maintenance whether then the sign is performed. But in this case, we decided not to do it because it's within our discretion and we chose to rely on the police. Now, this evidence that they're talking about of the nighttime versus daytime, if you look at that evidence in their record sites, it is pure speculation. At most, the person who called the police, who is not a policymaking person, said, we think that perhaps the vandalism is occurring more frequently.
Do you agree with Ms. McElhaney's definition that maintenance involves the preservation of traffic control functions designed by TxDOT?
That's a great point. No, I don't, Your Honor. Maintenance involves keeping the sign in its original state. What she's referring to is the definition of condition from Lawson, which is the A2. Totally different to this.
I don't understand the distinction between what you just said and what she said. What I heard you say in terms of defining maintenance sounds like the same thing as preserving the traffic control function as designed.
No, it's not, Your Honor.
Okay.
For this reason, any maintenance in this case involved keeping the traffic sign up as it was originally put there. In other words, was it originally put there with the screw-in or breakaway design? Was it originally put 12 feet from the road? Maintenance is keeping it in that state. We don't ask in maintenance whether then the sign is performing its traffic control function. In maintenance, we ask, the state put it there in a certain way. Did it continue to maintain it in that way? That's what maintenance is. The condition definition she's referring to is a different idea altogether. That only comes into play when there's a physical defect in a sign, and then we ask, is that physical defect preventing the sign from performing its traffic control function?
Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel. That concludes the argument in the first clause. The court will take a brief recess.
The audience will be right.